greetings from Asheville, everybody, where I am touring, selling out shows all over the place, feeling good, and creating a lot of fun opportunities. This is the second episode with Grant Lindahl. I wanted to make a couple notes in the intro because this was recorded a couple of weeks ago. One, this is a really fun peek into the writing process, potentially, because this is when we hashed this out, I really just tried to brainstorm a bunch and didn't have it all together, and it all came together in pretty short order. I already recorded something that I think will make a good future Tales from the Trip. I already started telling this story on stage, and it's doing really well, so it already has come a long way since this first little brainstorming sesh. So hope you get to enjoy it in its rarest form. The first minute or so of this interview, we just had a couple audio issues, so it's going to sound a bit off, but then it'll sound normal after that. And wanted to do some show plugs quick because things are doing really well. I'm in Atlanta tomorrow night, and there's still a few tickets left for that. It's going to sell out. But for whatever reason, didn't sell out as fast as the other ones, which are selling like crazy. I think there might be, no, Huntsville the day after is sold out, Bentonville the day after is sold out. And then this Saturday in Tulsa got added very recently, and there's still at the moment, I think there's still about half the tickets left, but that will sell out for sure. Same with Wichita the Sunday after, which just got released. That will sell out for sure as well, but there's still tickets left. There's two shows on the Sunday in Wichita. And then, I'm doing, George R.R. Martin's Theater in, Santa Fe, cool small little cinema, and the first show already sold out for that, and just added a second show. We just put those online anyway. There's two shows there, and then working on New England stuff. I already confirmed some stuff outside of just outside of New York City and in Philly. That will be added for the middle of April, and then working on New England for the beginning of April, and just putting a thing together for Southern California. It looks like in LA, I might have a venue lined up where we're going to do the first trials of the whole visual component of things in a small space as a trial run. And so go to ShaneMoss.com, make sure and sign up for my mailing list so you can keep up to date. I'm excited to be making my way to LA and going to be doing a bunch of podcasting and seeing a bunch of LA friends there. So who knows who's going to be on Mind Under Matter next. I do plan on connecting with Ramin. I plan on getting Dave Waite and some of the other people that you've heard about from the show on the show. So you've heard about them in the past, and a few things like that. So we are going to have next week off just because I am insanely busy with travel, but maybe I'll do some solo tour update things or something like that on the road to put on Patreon. Which, by the way, Patreon, if you're missing Ramin episodes, there's like 80 Mind Under Arts and things with Ramin. They're all evergreen. And Ramin is, after we restructured, we're able to give Ramin a third of the Patreon proceeds, and about two thirds go to McCool, and then I just like doing the show and investing in it. So In case you're wondering where that money goes, that's generally about where we're at right now and fluctuates depending on a few things. But so thanks for the support. Check out Patreon if you want to hear old bonus content. Those are just as good episodes as any public ones. And again, go to shanemoss.com to check out more of my dates. You guys are awesome.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Minds Under Matters. I am joined by Grant Lindahl again. This is part two. If you didn't see the first episode, Grant was the creator of Comedy Central's Tales from the Trip. He had a wonderful episode talking all about his art background and how that show started. Which I inspired. I get to pat myself on the back for that. I'm once again wearing my attire, getting ready for my Vegas show, which Grant is helping me do. He's doing some animation for it. There's going to be other artists involved as well. I'm so excited. This suit, by the way, brought to you by Freeborn Designs, who I didn't even tell them that I'm giving them a plug on the show or anything. I just collaborate with a lot of different psychedelic artists, and so I asked them to give me an offer code for listeners. So it's capital, all caps, TRIP, T-R-I-P, for 15% off. And then I'll also get some store credit so I can get more awesome suits for Vegas. That's the arrangement that I have worked out. So you're not supporting me financially, you're supporting me stylistically. If you get an awesome wardrobe for yourself. So, as we mentioned last time, this one is last time I interviewed Grant. Now I'm going to tell Grant some stories that I'm kind of considering for a Tales of the Trip type part of my psychedelic show, A Better Trip, coming to Area 15 in Vegas. Tickets should be available now at the time that you're seeing this. Go to shanemoss.com. And so excited. And first, before we get into this, what got you into psychedelics?
Oh, I was in a bad place. I had gotten fired from a job, and I had called my parents, and I was like, hey, I don't have any money, and I just lost this job because I was working like this mailroom, and I had fucked something up. Like, I sent something to a wrong place, and they were like, you're out. And so I was like super broke, and I called my parents, and my parents had, on the same day, found out that my brother had been lying for years about going to college, that he was actually just taking one class and using the student loan money to live off of and gamble. And so he like, so I just called them and I was like, Mom, I just got fired. I had never been fired before. And like, it was just really freaked out because I'm a pretty anxious person. And I could just hear my dad screaming in the background. And at my brother, he's on the phone with my brother, and my brother's in, you know, Grand Forks, North Dakota, you know, fucking around. And so my mom's like, we can't help you right now. And so then they just hung up and I was like adrift. And so I'm riding the subway. I'm living in New York City. And these guys had seen my live show called Art School Acid Dropout. And it was inspired by like Dada, like the Dada art movement, which is just like really like anything is possible. It's all just absurd, you know, like, and I was really into like performance artists like Chris Burden, just like, and like the, you know, like the theater of like just driving your audience insane and like making crazy, just like really making crazy shit. So like we make like giant puppets and the narratives would get really weird. And so it was this live sketch show that was really strange that I was doing at the Creek in the Cave in Long Island City, Queens. And I do it once a month with my friends. And so these like kind of like stoner dudes had seen it And I had smoked weed once and I had never done anything else. I was very anti-drugs.
How old were you?
I was 26. So,
wow. Yeah. This is 6 years ago. You had smoked weed once. You were already doing everything in every way that you've described your art to me, especially early on. It seems like you were already doing psychedelic art. It seems like your art's maybe like gotten less psychedelic once you started getting
kind of. So like everybody always thought I was on drugs because of my work. Like, you know, like I was on a bunch of sports teams in school and I would draw all the time. And, you know, I grew up in kind of like a redneck community and they'd be like, dang, Grant, your drawings are just something like we don't get that, you know, like. Something else, like unholy. And my brother was like really into like smoking weed and other things. And he got caught a bunch and it kind of,
he was older.
He's younger. So I was the oldest, but like, I was like, I wanted to get out of my hometown and like the opioid crisis was exploding. So like anybody that like did like any kind of drug kind of led to doing cotton shit. And so I was like, I'm not getting involved with any of this. I want to get the fuck out of, you know, Thurmont, Maryland. Plus my dad was extremely strict. Like my brother got caught smoking weed and with some other stuff in it. And he like passed out on our floor and my parents found him. And he like told him that he was doing drugs or whatever. And my dad took away. So we had these built in beds that my dad had built. Like they're built into the foundation of the room, and my dad took my brother's mattress away for 3 months and made him sleep on the board as punishment for smoking weed. And so it scared the shit out of me. I was like, I just want to get out of here, man. Like, this is crazy. And so I was really scared of that. And then in art school, there's tons of drugs, and also kids came from different cultures where like their parents did other substances or like would mail them a brick of weed. And like, I'd see them do it, but like, I was even like adverse to drinking. Like, I was scared of all that. Cause I just didn't want to fuck up and end up back on the farm. Yeah. And so I had smoked weed once in college. And when I smoked,
That's what I was going to ask was how was it? How was it the first
time? Very disappointing. I was like, this is what my dad was so upset about. Like, I was like overrated for sure.
Yeah.
And this is like Baltimore weed, so it's not that good. And so like I did that and then I was like overrated. I was very hyper focused on like proving my dad wrong that I could be a successful artist. And so, you know, I was kind of in this bad place. My parents were like, we can't help you. You can't come home. You know, I had a lot of free time and then these stoner guys had seen my show and it's pretty insane. Like I would like get naked and like I would like go inside a weather balloon and like I have a guy slice it open with like a samurai sword and like it was a lot. I don't know if it was any of it was good, but we were having a lot of fun. and like we would like throw eggs at each other. It's just like there's this play called Ubu the King or King Ubu. And it's a French play from 1890s. And it's like the theater of like the absurd or the theater of like the annoying. And it was so upsetting to the audience that they ripped out the chairs before the play could finish. And it's kind of like people would like take shits on like the stage. And like, it's really like an insane play. King Ubu.
Wow.
Yeah. It's kind of obscure. But like, so there's like, I was doing stuff like that. And so these guys saw the show and they also knew about all my poster work and artwork. And they were like, hey, we're doing this, you know, secret. They messaged me and they were like, hey, we're doing this secret show where everybody eats mushrooms and tells a story about the time they did drugs for the first time or like a Tales from the Trip, basically. Can you come on stage and eat mushrooms and then start drawing all the comedians and we'll see your drawings get crazier as the mushrooms kick in? And at first I said no, but then after all this stuff happened where I basically kind of lost everything, was super isolated, and I was like, fuck it, sure. And I was like really scared because like I didn't do anything. And so I showed up to the creek in the cave, and they gave me this bag. I think it was like an eighth of mushrooms. And they're like, okay, here you go. And so I was like scared that I'd get caught or something, because I'm a very rule follower kind of guy. And so I went to the bathroom and I ate the whole bag, and a whole like eighth of mushrooms, just straight, like nervously. Like I just took a gob, like a handful, and just went boom. And I was like, yeah. I guess that's what I was supposed to take. And they were like, I went back upstairs and they're like, that was for everybody. And I was like, oh no, should I throw up? And they're like, no, we got another bag. You'll be fine. You're going to have a lot of fun. And so I was like, all right. And so then I started getting that roller coaster nausea feeling.
Yeah. Oh,
and I also had brought a Tinder date to the show, and we had only had like two or three dates. And this girl was really pretty, but she had a lot of concussions. So she had like huge pupils. And I remember like, so I get on stage and they had like all these balloons.
I like that you just glossed right over. Oh, she was really pretty, but she had a lot of concussions. So she had very big pupils.
Well, it plays in later. So,
okay.
So what happens is I get set up my easel and, you know, I'm dressed as a mime or like a, yeah, I was dressed as a mime. Like I showed up as a mime because I thought that would be funny to be like a French mime. And like the stripy shirt, the beret and cigarettes and shit. And at the time I was drawing with Japanese Sumi ink pens, and they do these like, you know, it's like wet ink lines and stuff. It's really cool. And I was like feeling kind of floaty, but I was like, I don't feel anything. You know, I just feel really like I'm on a roller coaster or something, like nothing's too weird. And so I go, this ain't shit, you know, like in my mind. And I drop the first comedian goes up and I'm like, okay, here we go. You know, I just feel sick, and I draw this line. And as soon as I draw the line, it goes. And then following the trail of the black line, as the ink went on, there's a rainbow, very thin rainbow of light. And I went, what the fucking fuck? And I look over and everything started just getting real strange. Like, I kept thinking people kept changing like the colors of the room. Like somebody was like having like a color light. That wasn't happening. They had like a Patrick star balloon, and it kept turning and its eyes would kind of look at me. And then... And I was like, just like, and like the drawing would ground me, you know, because that's a place of comfort. So I was like, okay, as long as I can do this, I'm okay. And you know, I look at this girl that I, you know, with the huge eyes, and she had like cat eyes. It looked like fucking like cat slits. It was fucking freaky. And like the audience at one point looked like an inverted wave. Like it was just like perceptions of depth were very different. And the way I thought about, I was seeing, not necessarily seeing colors I hadn't seen before, but the colors had different meanings to me at that point. And not so much the structure of drawing these lines. It was more of like the feeling of people's like lines and movements and stuff. And so by the end of that, also, the show started at midnight, so I took like an eighth of mushrooms at midnight, and I didn't know anything about them or what the effects would be. And so at the end of the night, my drawings, by the time it ended, the drawings were just like lines in like abstract shapes. They weren't like a face. They looked like shit, in my opinion. But these guys thought they were the coolest fucking thing. And then I went home to my basement apartment in Queens with this girl who has to babysit this guy she went on like two Tinder dates with. She was a very nice girl. She did not have to do that. But like, I looked at my phone and it was like just crazy. Like, and then like, I couldn't sleep. And I didn't realize that, you know, at least for me, when I take, you know, psychedelics, I can't sleep at all. Like I'm so fucking tired. And so I kept Googling, which you should never do when you take in psychedelic substances. How long does this last? Will I be high forever? I Googled that.
Will I be high
forever? And one guy on Reddit was like, I did mushrooms once, and nothing has been made me feel joy ever again. Everything is just, and I was like, oh man, this shit sucks. And like, you know, like I, at one point, everything kind of, this is like maybe like 4 a.m. I'm so tired. This girl's had enough with me. And I was like, everything kind of calmed down because like it would get really, really crazy. Calm down. Really, really crazy. Calm down. And I was like, oh, I'm calm now. And then I closed my eyes. Aztec laser tag. That's all I can describe it. It was just like insane, like neon, like when my eyes closed. And I was like, and all this like trippy stuff that I was seeing, I wasn't like, oh, this is so cool. I was like, this is fucking dumb. Your brain is dumb. This sucks. I was like, I hate this. Like, but then, I was like, ah, oh, this is bullshit. Like, fuck all that. Like, cool, like trippy stuff, like fuck Pink Floyd, fuck all that shit, like this sucks. and I just remember like the next day, I call it the strange because everything is just weird. That's probably my favorite part about psychedelics is like the burned out next day of like the
I was just talking about that like today or yesterday to one of my friends that just ate some mushrooms a couple days ago, and I was like, I immediately the next day I was like, well, just don't forget like these next couple days. That's the real magic. That's why you do mushrooms. And I was like, I don't even like tripping a lot of times. It's just like a thing that I get through so that like the next couple days are awesome.
Yeah, I don't like any of that part where it's like it's not like that. It's like, oh, it's so crazy and cool. It's like more annoying than anything. This is a lot. But yeah, the next day I like went for a walk and like I think I after that moment I became like the most like I had a lot of trouble being really disciplined with my work and like focus, and I always felt like I had to get the work done as fast as possible or like a project couldn't be done in parts. But after that moment, something in my mind, at least for like 30 days, because it kind of goes away, like I felt some kind of enlightenment towards like just being like little. I had this epiphany of little things lead to big things. So little moments that you can do to accomplish the bigger thing will succeed. And I've stuck with that. But I didn't realize that till the next day when I was kind of having the like I was unemployed. I just, you know, terrified this girl that I liked, and she, like, I didn't terrify her, but like, I definitely weirded her out. I don't know. I love that day where you're just completely burned out from no sleep and, you know, your endocrine system or whatever is completely burned out. And you're just kind of, so I walked through like this graveyard that's right by my apartment in Queens. And I'm walking through this weird graveyard, just having this thought of like, you know, you can just like step back from it all and just kind of like stop worrying about all the dumb little things, you know, because I used to worry about everything. And I still kind of do. But mm-hmm. I try to remember that. And that was the first time I ever tripped. And it was fucking gnarly. It was crazy.
Have you ever thought about doing a Tales from the Trip?
They won't let me. They said
won't let you?
No, they said I wasn't famous enough. I didn't have like any following. What? Yeah. And I've told them that story. I have some other good ones, and they're like,
they won't let the creator of Tales from the Trip do a Tales from the Trip.
I did a test shoot, and they were like, no. There's a reason I don't bake them anymore.
Wow. That's funny. I mean, sorry.
No, that's fine.
That's so ridiculous.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
that's like, hey,
show business, man.
I see all that. It's. Yeah, I mean, I'd move a few things around here and there. That's what I was saying. Like, I take liberties. It's like when I take liberties with my stories, it's like, well, Aztec laser tag doesn't need to be there. Even if it happened in real time at that part of the story, it could have happened like here to like make this narrative like work more. So it's like, it's still the truth and it still happened. It's just, it's like, you're still trying to, I'm still trying to like say a thing. Like I need to like get to like a moral of the story. And
oh yeah, that's just the vomit draft. I always call it the vomit. Where you just kind of put it all out and then you try to structure it later. But fun fact, I've only done psychedelics at around midnight, and I've done good amount, but for some reason, every time they've been given to me,
you're a real gremlin.
I've only done them, and I regret it every time because I'm so tired. And the only time I've had a good time, because you talk about set and setting, completely true, was when I did it in the afternoon or early evening when I went to go see SpongeBob on Broadway. And that was a fun time. You know, I did not realize there would be that many children at SpongeBob on Broadway, but there was quite a bit. And I only wanted to go to it because
you didn't realize there would be children at SpongeBob.
No. Well, in my mind, because I didn't grow up with much, I thought children's families of children couldn't afford fancy orchestra seat tickets, but I actually took my signing bonus with Comedy Central and bought orchestra seat tickets and like a bunch of mushrooms. And me and my friend ate them in sandwiches in the park. And then we went to go see it. And I was like, oh man, I am very hot around kids. There's all these Wall Street dads with children. And then as soon as they kind of clicked in and I was grooving, I was like, I want to be a dad. That dad's cool. Wow, just groove it. And, this musical's insane, And I was like, but then I was like really feeling it. And then at one point this mom was like, she was like, do you want these Sour Patch Kids? My kid can't finish them. And they're like my favorite candy. And I was like tripping. I was like, oh, this is great. And then at one point, like pirates walk through the audience. And I just like turned to my left and didn't realize it. And there's a pirate right in my face going, "Arr!" And I thought it was the greatest thing. I was like, yeah, this is awesome. And then I called a girl or I FaceTimed a girl that I was seeing at the end of that show and said, you remind me of my mom. She was like, it was so weird. But then weirdly, her and my mom became like really close friends. And my mom was kind of mad when we broke up, but like super weird trips. But yeah, definitely a gremlin. Only did it, when people, because of the show and like other people I know, tend to just give me psychedelics. I've never really like sought them out.
Right. And I get it.
Yeah. But now, I smoke weed quite a bit because I'm in Los Angeles and it's kind of nice. But I think that veil of how what we've been taught with drugs and stuff, I was shocked at like how much of that is kind of BS. But then also I do think like some people you talk about how like you now think like you can have bad trips. Yeah, I do think you can definitely have bad trips.
Oh, yeah.
I've had some going to a location with people you don't really know. And I saw a car accident on acid once that was kind of crazy. It wasn't terrible, but just seeing a car smash into another car like at 1 a.m. in New York, you're like, oh, my God, this is the last time I did psychedelics, I was in Vegas, actually, and I had taken mushroom pills. And I was doing really good and I was having a lot of fun in Vegas. And then I was like, I'll do one more mushroom pill at like 2 a.m. And it then was not good. And then I was just in this skeezy hotel room, just pacing around, couldn't sleep, missing my girlfriend. I had like lost all the stuff I enjoyed before that. And then I was still tripping when I had to get on the airplane the next day. And then like, I just thought I was going to have a heart attack in the airport and stuff like, so I don't recommend it unless like you really want to work through some stuff like a dark night of the soul. Like that's what those, you know, they say like nothing good happens after, midnight or 2 a.m. or whatever. No, but it doesn't mean that it's not you don't learn from it,
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, let's try. So this, These are a couple stories. One I have told on stage like a few times. I just, because it's really funny, but there's no ending to it, and so it's like, and I don't know what the point of it is, other than it's just like funny and random. And then I have another one that's just like sort of interesting and peculiar. I'm not sure if there's anything funny about it, but I can think of like a moral of the story and stuff. So I think I'll start with the moral of the story one to see how it's structured. And then it will make sense where I'm putting the other one in the story. Cause they're both on acid. And when I just, so people like, my writing process is, I don't try to be funny ever. I try to just like get out what I'm trying to say or the details or whatever on paper. I try to come up with what I think the structure should be and what I'm trying to say or what the point of it will be. And then I just try to notice when something is funny. And then those parts that I notice, then I'm like, okay, so dig into that more. To make it funnier. But that's all like, if I sit down to be like, okay, sit down and write funny things right now. I mean, I can do that if someone's like paying me to like, hey, I need jokes about this. Like, I'm sort of able to, but for my own stuff, it just comes so much easier if I just write what I want to write and then just let it happen from there. So I encourage you to like interrupt me at any time, ask any questions, but especially if any fun imagery or if any points that you're like, oh, that part would be something worth keeping in.
Can I grab a marker? Is it okay if I doodle while you tell this?
Yeah, doodle. Okay,
I'm going to grab a marker real quick.
Okay, so acid's a weird one for me because I have, you're already animating some Bicycle Day material, which is, it's going to be a key thing. It's going to, right now, show opens with probably like, hey, you know, I asked for the psychedelic Willy Wonka, some stupid thing about how I look, just elephant in the room. And then I want to talk about the origins of the universe and how we got to be here as like an appreciation for existing and people being in the room. And then get into the history of acid. That's the Bicycle Day stuff. And then I have right now, I think I might show this. Old video, this old propaganda video, that someone is talking about taking acid and eating a hot dog and the hot dog having a face and screaming for its life and stuff. And I'm like, oh, this could be an interesting way to explore like how the psychedelic experience gets misinterpreted by people. And then, so I have this story. So acid is usually the most boring of all psychedelics for me. And people have, people take issue with this. There's like the acid camp and the mushroom camp. And there's always like this war between them. Like mushrooms really affect me. And acid just not that much. And people are like, you haven't done the purest, or it hasn't been fresh enough. And you know, you're not doing it some right way. And so I'm often inclined to take a 10 strip or something, but then I've met people that have like done a 10 strip and they've just been peculiar ever since. I'm skittish about it. So this is like an odd, this is a good example of what a normal like acid trip is like for me. So once I was at my, I lived in this house with four other comedians. We called it the Home for Wayward Bros. And it was, everyone was the same story. It was just this rundown old house that we were basically squatting in and had very cheap rent in LA. And everyone was a comedian who had went through a breakup, and that's how they ended up there. And they are there to like get their life back together or whatever. And so I'm there and I eat acid, and then I feel like very little. I'm tripping, but everything's just like more clear to me. Every time I do acid, everything's just more clear. And and so it's not like a visually stimulating thing. And so I had this idea, like, I'm going to use this opportunity. I'm going to use the next 12 hours to work on my life and just work on the stuff that I want to be better at. I'm more engaged with my subconscious right now. So I'm going to start cleaning. I'm a very messy person, so I'm just going to start cleaning my room. So I start cleaning and I'm organizing files and stuff. And I'm doing just the most incredibly boring, you know, what you would think would be the most boring possible trip you could have. And I'm feeling good. I'm organizing my life. I'm doing like spreadsheets and stuff. I'm just the most responsible I've ever been on acid. And we had an ant problem in this house. And finally, I was like, you know, enough is enough. I keep on waking up to just ants crawling all over me, and I don't do anything about it. I'm just living in squalor in this shithole, and I'm just going to go and I'm going to get rid of these ants. And so I just got in my car. And I went to Home Depot and I just get every kind of ant thing I can get and every like spray and everything like that. And I'm like talking to Home Depot people on acid, and it's just, everything's just more clear to me than normal. I'm just like, I have a mission. This is what I have to do. I have to talk. I'm hyper functional. I don't like encouraging driving, so I'm going to replace that part of the story because I have way too many I drove on psychedelic stories. What's that?
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
I become like Mr. Safety when I'm on drugs.
Really?
Because I'm a very cautious person, so it just amplifies like, but also it's more like I just kind of have to go with the flow with it, but like I would never like, I'm like the kind of guy that would like, give my keys to somebody and be like, put those away somewhere, like very, because I just want to be safe all the time.
See, I'm Mr. Safety when I'm tripping with other people. I always take charge. I'm always the trip sitter that no one asked for. And I'm always like monitoring everyone and checking in too much. It's why I like tripping by myself, because I can like really just let go and do whatever I want, which is, that's worth exploring. And I always like just like doing something when I'm by myself. I always, if I have a peculiar thought of like, well, this would be a weird thing to do right now, I'm like, oh, well, no one's around, I'll just be super weird. And like, I love bawling, crying, and then like laughing like a maniac and just having just the most intense emotional experiences and just losing myself and just completely letting go. And so, so I'm at Home Depot. I get a bunch of sprays. I drive home, and this is like, I'm peaking on acid now. And I get back, because this is like hour six or something like that. I felt like I had like full control over the situation. But then I started spraying all of the ants outside, and I started spraying for them, and there's so many ants everywhere, all over the outside. And I'm just seeing myself just committing genocide during, and I'm like, this is the strangest. This is what no one does on everyone else. Like, it's like, I'm going to not drive. I'm going to be safe. I'm going to get a little like wild And then I'm going to realize that all life is precious and feel bad about death and whatnot. And I just did the exact opposite of every psychedelic experience where I'm like, I'm going to first be the most boring version of myself. Then I'm going to drive a car, and then I'm going to commit genocide to all of these ants. And it was this whole epic thing. And I just remember being outside in this dump and squalor and just being like very paranoid about people watching me and thinking they're going to know I'm on acid right now if they see me. Like, why in the world would they think that? And so I thought it would be fun to just like explore the idea of like ant genocide and everything and have.
It makes me think of like when people say like when there's a death and they go, why God, why? But maybe he's just on acid. Trying to
That's funny. I'm going to write that down actually. So yeah, so then I just make a whole kind of dramatic narrative of like going to war with these ants, and it was amazing. It changed everything. I no longer had ants crawling all over everywhere. I could expand on just how insanely dirty this house was before and how clean my house got after this acid trip.
Where was this in LA?
Just Culver City.
Oh, so that's where I am right now.
Yeah, it was with Dave Waite and then a rotating, revolving door bros.
Did you know that Home Depot that you went to, it was built on an Indian burial ground?
Really?
Yeah. They're constantly having like chaos happen at that Home Depot. My girlfriend and I hate it. And so people say it's built on because it's right by the marshlands too. So it's like,
that's funny. That's a fun detail. So I thought, so that's the story that I'm like, well, it's just like so peculiar that I did that. And I think that I could make that into something as long as I have something like super funny to insert. And I just thought, I thought the moral of the story, because I was thinking about it the other day, I was thinking about just how epic it felt to just be like, going to war with you know, billions of ants and everything. And I realized I had this realization while creating stories for the show that when you're young and you're a teenager and you eat mushrooms and things, I remember thinking, man, the craziest stuff always happens when you're tripping, and there's just these weird coincidences and the timing and everything else. And I get older and I've tripped enough, and I realize actually it's just that stuff's happening all of the time and you just never appreciate it. And psychedelics are the thing that help you appreciate just how epic and crazy and weird and random life is all of the time. And that's like a really important message in my show, is like, that's a theme of it that I kind of get to over and over again. So I thought using like a story that's like on the surface would be sort of boring. You know, just like, that's why the ants were around, because going to get ant traps from Home Depot is a boring thing to do. But if you're on acid, it's like the most crazy adventure that you've ever been on. So I kind of wanted to like make some point about that, about how.
If you write down like everything you did in a week, like all the little details, if you actually pay attention to the things that you see around you, you know, that there's, because people constantly are always like, because like when I was doing that, writing a lot more, like I would write every little detail of something interesting happened in my day for like my comedy, like people would be like, I wish I, you know, my life is so boring, I wish I could have stuff like that. And I'm like, well, you do, you just, you're not recording it.
Exactly. And I would love to be able to make a point like that. And so now I thought I'll replace the me driving to Home Depot with this super funny story about taking an Uber on acid. And so it can just be to Home Depot instead of what it actually was. But the real story is I was on acid with my buddy Steve. This is at the house for Wayward Bros. And we were hanging out and we decided that, you know, acid's just so long. So in the story, I would probably throw in some acid jokes. I would maybe, like, if it was a Tales thing, I would maybe, like, you know, could throw in some Albert Hoffman stuff or a little bit of history here and there, add a few details, throw in some LSD jokes that I already have. That's how I usually would construct a story like this, just to spice it up a little bit. And then, so we are going to go to, we're going to go on a hike. I'm pretty sure I've told this story on the show before. And the story was, and the hike was like a 20-minute drive. And so we did the responsible thing and got an Uber. We call the Uber says it's like 5 minutes away or something. So we go to sit outside and it takes forever. It's like 30 minutes or something. But what is time anyway? Who cares? We're just in such a good mood. We're hanging out. I'm not even worrying about this Uber. And then finally, after like it's like 30 minutes late, this Uber finally pulls up and this like 80-year-old Asian guy jumps out and he goes, "You are my very first Uber ride." And we're like, "Yes." And we're just like high-fiving him. We're high-fiving each other. We both get in. And because I want to make this is going to reinforce that point again later on. Like, I don't know if you saw my 2CB tales from the trip at all, but I kind of have a moral at the end of the story that's about, did you see it by chance?
No. I didn't see that one.
Well, I have a moral at the end of the story that's like about how if I wouldn't have been tripping, I might have behaved like an asshole in this situation. But because I was tripping, it was just an adventure. And I could use that same kind of, because I might have, I don't know, if I would have been sober or something, I might have been upset that this Uber was late and then might have been upset that it was like a person's first time. And then I'll put that in toward the end, but that's where it's going.
Instead of being in the moment and celebrating this guy's journey, you're thinking about yourself.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so I get in the back seat and my buddy Steve, he gets in the passenger seat. I'm in the back seat and the guy's like, "Where are you going?" And I was like, "Oh, I put it in the app." And he's like, he doesn't speak like any English. And his phone is also in Mandarin or whatever. And I don't know who said, he just had like a grandkid or something that just set this up on his phone and just let him go. And he has no idea how to use this thing. I've never been on the Uber driving side of things, so I don't know how it's supposed to look. And his phone is in Mandarin, and I'm in the back seat, and I'm tripping my balls off. And I'm like, is this really happening? And finally, I'm like, oh, I think it's the green button there on the bottom. Hit that. And he hits it, and it starts navigating. Okay, we figured that out. And then he starts driving, and the whole time it's like, whoa, it was just like a lot of, it was a lot of like, it was like a lot of accelerating and then stopping. It like felt like it was one of the guy's first times driving as well. It was crazy. And I was like, is it always like this? Or is this just me tripping? What's happening? I'm asking Steve. I'm like, I'm looking at him. I'm like, is this? And I was like, hey, are you in first gear by chance? Like, that's what it felt like.
Oh.
And he's like, oh, he can't understand what I'm saying. And I'm like, are you in first gear? And his car is this weird foreign car that is like also constructed in this weird way. And the gear shift is strange and I can't make sense of it. And just everything about it is weird. And I'm asking Steve, I'm like, is he in first gear? He's like, I don't know. And we're trying to ask him. He can't understand what we're trying to ask. He's just driving and he's going to get on an interstate soon. And so finally there's a stop sign. I'm like, stop, stop, stop. Hold on. And he's like, what? And I'm like, Steve, can you just check to see if his car is in first gear? And this, it was almost like a stick shift or something, but it wasn't. It was just a really weird transmission. And so Steve starts like moving it around to these different places. And like, neither of us can read this thing. And then finally we realized that it actually was in drive. It was in the correct position. And it's just that the guy drives with one foot on the brake the whole time.
That's a thing in LA, because I think they're trying to save their brakes. So they slam on. So like half the time when I get in Ubers here in LA, they will do that because they're trying to save that. That's my theory. But that is like, I'd say like one out of four Ubers, you'll get them where they're doing that shit. And it makes you feel nauseous. Yeah. Like you could kind of tell it's going to happen too within like the first 2 seconds of like getting in the Uber, and they slam out and because like I have a lot of neck problems, so I immediately feel it in my neck and I'm like, oh man, this is gonna be a long ride.
Yeah. So the whole, and when I tell the story on stage, you know, I jazz it up a quite a bit more, but to me, like the really funny part is that like, he was in drive the whole time and Steve just like messed with this guy's transmission just needlessly. And the dude just let him do that and was still just happy about things and okay with it because this was his first Uber ride. And as far as he knew, this is just what it's like to drive people on in an Uber, is they just get in your vehicle and start messing with your transmission while laughing.
I love that.
On acid. And he just went along with it. And then we like tipped him huge at the end and stuff and high fived more. It was this whole great thing. I don't really have like an end to it because we just got to our proper destination or whatever. It's just a hike.
Okay.
We just went for a hike afterwards. But there's like a message there. And if it was instead, if the Uber just went to the Home Depot and it was just that part of the story and I blended those together, I don't know that I want to do it this way. But I just don't think either of the stories are strong enough. Like, I mean, I can sit down and write them out and make them funny and like put a bunch of like punchlines along the way and everything. But as it is, I was like, that might be a funny way to, because I was also thinking about the stage show and I was like, oh, I'm already talking about Bicycle Day. I may be showing this acid propaganda thing. I don't want to spend like 30 minutes on LSD, which is one of my least favorite psychedelics. It's only like a 70 minute show. So maybe it would make sense for me to kind of compress this story in some way. So that's what I've been thinking about with it.
I could see that, you know, working. I like your, so like I drew a bunch of ants getting murdered there and then asking why that happened. And then it's just you like on acid, so you don't really care. And then the ant eater, and then we got the guy who is so joyous and excited to have you guys. Like, it's like serendipity. And then I don't know, I just drew one of the modern homes you see here in Culver City and weird ass car, but you know.
That's fun. Can you? That should be the episode art.
Sure. Yeah.
Can you take a pic, scan that or something for me?
Yeah, I'll scan it and I'll color it so you can have it. But
oh, fun.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that there would be a way to say, when I do acid, it doesn't affect me the same way. I just end up doing really boring stuff, like just getting my life together. And then this one time this happened, then fun Uber drive story, get to Home Depot, go back, Aunt genocide story. The moral of the story is that everyday life is actually epic. We just usually aren't on enough drugs to appreciate how epic it is.
Yeah, it's like taking, it slows everything down too, at least for me, where like you can take a moment in time and, you know, I think we get bored because we're not actually paying attention to anything around us or the value of it. We're too much about ourselves. But when you're on acid, it's really, you're kind of removed from it, or at least I am. And you see, like, yeah, because like the most boring, like, I think people, you know, like, I think it's so fucking lame when people are like, I'm going to go do, again, you're talking to the guy that's only done these drugs at like midnight in like crazy situations. But, you know, there's like such like A-type people who are like, I'm going to go to a cabin in the woods and do a nature hike, which I'm sure is great. But I find great value in, you know, like when I want to go to sleep, I don't think of something exciting. I think of myself turning the pages of a newspaper and I'm not even reading it. And it just slowly lulls me to sleep. Or like I start thinking of like the most boring things and I don't try to give meaning to any of it. You know, I just kind of let it happen. And that's kind of like how you, because like that's how people have bad trips, is when they fight it, you know, or they expect something from life. And I think life is truly when you just kind of let it happen and you just accept that, you know, what, you know, like we live in this age where everybody has this FOMO from social media and it's so toxic and we're told like this is what is value in life. But like finding that peace and genociding a bunch of ants.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I that's actually one of the main points in the LSD lady sees a hot dog with a face story that I was maybe gonna just show, you know, some clips of or whatever. That was one of the points that I wanted to make for that, was the not attaching to the experience too much. Because like, yes, if you attach so much to this idea that the hot dog is actually alive and actually screaming for its life, sure, but like, why are you attaching to the, like the way that should actually be an amazing story. Like if I told my friends, if I did acid with a bunch of my friends that I trip with regularly, and I was like, man, this hot dog is talking to me right now and screaming for its life, my friends would be like, oh man, why does Shane always get the cool experiences? I never get the talking hot dog thing, you know?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had anything that, like, you know, packaged, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's never quite like that. But I also, like, just like, I always hate it when people are like, I love the story, that the thing that I thought, I've had such a different perspective on it, because I heard it before I ever did any substances. And then after, I really thought about it, where you had that girlfriend's mom who she had a lot of body dysmorphia. And then she looked at herself in the mirror and she's like, it's awful. And she was so close from learning from that.
Yeah.
And I think about that when other people, when I was pitching Tales from the Trip, they, you know, people, executives and stuff would be like, I did drugs once, or like it's like when my dad told us that he had smoked pot once, and he was like, I smoked pot once before a basketball game and we lost, and I was like, never doing drugs ever again. I was like, yeah, of course, that, but that's, why did you do that during a basketball, like, that's gonna, I don't know, it's like if somebody went in a pool and was like, yeah, I almost drowned. I'm never going to swim again. And I'm like, yeah, but you didn't do it right. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
I wanted to ask you as we start wrapping up, what were some of your favorite tales from the trips to work on?
Oh, fucking all of yours. Those were easy. Oh, like, because like what I do in the process of the show is that I watch it once straight through, mm-hmm. and then I close my eyes and I will listen to it, and I just kind of let visuals come as they come. And I just do that maybe like 4 or 5 times. Maybe not that many. It depends on the story for yours because it was just so rich, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I would just shorthand write down all the things that come to me. And so with yours, they were so easy, you know, like you describe it so well. And like it was always a pleasure doing yours because like I didn't have to do any like extra work because you actually did it. You thought of like every point and there's just so much to choose from. But yeah, so I'd say yours. I'm trying to think because there's just so many that we did and I don't want to give you dead air because it's like hard for me to think of like which because we would do 2 a month. So like I would start one and we'd finish it in 2 weeks. And then I would immediately the next day start up again. So it was like, I didn't have a break ever. Mm. And so it was all kind of a blur, but what's his name? He's part of the new Jackass, group. He's the larger dude in the Jackass movies. I can't remember his name. He's a super nice guy. But he had some really great stories and just I like the way he kind of like they felt really honest and not showy, you know? And just something about I like it when people go from one setting to another in the narrative. And he like went to a party, like this guy kept giving him mushrooms. And then he like walked out into the winter snow and then went to another party and then smoked like PCP or something and like passed out. And like, it was just crazy. I love those because that's similar to my experience of like, all right, I'll get in this car and where are we going? It's New Year's. And I just, you know, bombed a show. It was crazy. And I like, we had this rapper from, something Shoreline Mafia. I can't remember his name, but he was really great. Both the Shoreline Mafia guys, because they come from like such a different culture than just like, cause they were like coke dealers and they had never done psychedelics and listening to this rapper take psychedelics and then call his girlfriend and be like, I want to take you to the beach. We never go to the beach. And she's like, what is wrong with you? And then he went to like Denny's with his mother-in-law and stuff. And I'm just thinking of this like hard rapper, like having these insightful moments. And I was like, man, that's beautiful. And like, like they would be like, you have like some guys who are like traditional, like white guy, college educated that are like, yeah, and I had this really insightful moment where I was with my friends. But like these guys were like, I had no idea this was going to happen. And like in the way their perspectives. And I liked Riley Reed's was really cool because her trip was it wasn't so much about her. It was about her dealing with somebody who was tripping really hard. And she had to like be nurturing to this stranger. That one was great. I really liked Ron Funches and Rory Scovel's where they were hiking and
I enjoyed that.
That one was fun. And I'm trying to think if there's any other. I mean, there was one. It was like one of Ben's friends. She's a writer and she made a mushroom like alcohol. Like it was like mushroom infused.
I saw that one. I remember that one. Yeah.
Yeah. That was one of my favorites.
Well, she was a very, very good storyteller.
Yeah.
She was just this talented storyteller. Like she must tell stories for a living.
She wrote a book. I think it's a segment from her book, but I thought she did also because she was like in the Southwest and it's just so fun to blend that. And And I love the scene where she just melts into the ground like mm-hmm. that was, and then the camera changes, and that was fun. But I honestly think any story you had where you met like the purple lady and your introspections, that was something really neat. And Ramin's was really good. We had a lot of fun with his, because you guys were just really tapped in to what you learned from it, and not so much what you learned from it, but you're again back to where you're like, I'm not trying to be funny, I'm trying to just, you know, be clear. And yeah, and I think that's really key to comedy and also just storytelling and communication in general. And it really shows, because when we would have people, we would have a lot of artists from Atlantic Records who are great people and definitely did drugs, but they're not storytellers, and they would try to be funny or try to make mm-hmm. it interesting. And like sometimes we'd have like a guest director filming it, trying to feed them lines. And I always hated when they would do that, because I want it to, even if it's boring, again, you know, we would have people who were like, oh, I went to a park and the grass was weird. But I was like, dig deeper. Tell me, how was that grass weird? What did you feel? Was there a breeze on your skin? What was that moment? Were you different after? Like, we never gave this to you, but we used to give people questionnaires before they would come on the show to kind of get their mind going.
And they were
extensive, of like who, what, when, where, why. But then, like, you know, we would kind of drill into people and really try to be like, dig into yourself, you know. And we'd take two of them. We never had to do two takes with you, but we'd always do one take with, you know, the talent. And then the second take was always better, because they, you know, got their structure out. And then, you know, they started finding these like really beautiful moments. And I honestly think it's not so much like the crazy moments in the show that I liked. I liked the weird moments of like introspection and like, again, the thing that I like about psychedelics is that dark night of the soul, the day after, like,
yeah.
There's that, it's kind of lame, but you know, there's that song, I think by maybe it's The Doors or Donovan, that's Everything's Strange, you know, and it truly is something like that, where you're kind of removed from society or from yourself, your introspection, and you're just kind of sitting in the moment looking at this miracle that is reality around you.
Yeah. That's the whole kind of premise of my Vegas show, or that's what I'm hoping to morph it into. I'm definitely kind of trying to bill it as this is the integration of the psychedelic experience, and because I just think it took me way too long to learn that, to learn how good and important those days after really were. And
well, I love your bit where you're like, take your lessons. True, because a lot of times when I do mushrooms, I've never really gone into it, because it always just came to me. I never sought it out.
Yeah.
And it was never like, oh, I'm going to have a blast. I was always like, oh man, this is going to get crazy. Goddamn. All right, here we go. But I like the 30 days after, where you're just kind of like, yeah, you're cleaning your house, you're trying to, honestly, I think it's a nice reset and could do a lot for people, and responsibly, you know. You know who else is amazing? I can't believe I left him out. Dude, it's been such a blur because I've done so many of these and it just is a fade, but fucking Duncan Trussells.
He's been on the second most number of times, right below me. I think he's had three. I've had five now.
Yeah, like I think that
Duncan's are really good. I watched every single one at one point, I think recently, when I was, because I had to do two of them in a row recently, and I was like, I want to see like what everyone else is doing. And there was some that I was like, oh, that's a little, that story's kind of weaker or whatever. Yeah. Duncan nails it.
I think he had like this ability, even with
because he put some information in too. That's always nice when you can like give give the listeners something like when they've just learned something, that when you can create a new lens and then allow the audience to now look through that lens with you.
Yeah. And it's also kind of like jazz, where you both have a pacing that it revolves in a beat of threes, where it keeps the rhythm and going, and it doesn't get too clunky. And it's, I don't know, like when I'm working on it and I'm going, cause I literally transcribe everything you guys say, and I meticulously like for the show that we're doing, or that I'm helping make art for, I literally
collaboration.
Yeah.
I added you. You're included in the description of the show and everything on the site, cool, on the ticket page. Yeah.
Nice. Thank you. That's so nice. I'm glad that, you know, that I get to do this, and it's super fun. I honestly like just being able to make cool animations to your word jazz. It's just fucking sick. Like it made my work better though. Like, I don't know. It's just so easy to do your stuff. Cause like, it just clicks and you're like, oh yeah, yeah. Look, he's talking about, you know, ant genocide. Let's make him about what if God was on drugs this whole time. Yeah. And we're not, he's trying to be better himself, but he's actually killing you all.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, that's funny.
Yeah. If fun fact for people who, if you like Tales from the Trip, if you watch the first 60 episodes, I'm actually hidden in the crowd. I'm a Where's Waldo in almost all 60 of them.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. And you can see my facial hair and hair change, and I'm hidden in all of them. So like, if you can find
that's fun.
Yeah. I'm like in the background, or I usually play like the villain.
You're like Stan Lee.
Yeah, yeah, like basically, like just kind of like, it mostly came out of like, I'm just so tired of coming up with like a character design. So I was like, let's just put in the other animators are in it, like Ben but whoever was working at that time, we would just make them a character, like my friend Godfrey and stuff. And we'd just put them in there, and we'd always have to get these run by legal too. And so a lot of times legal would be like, you can't show the Prophet Muhammad. That was like a big thing. But then they'd always, every time we would draw ourselves in it, they'd be like, are those characters based on real people? And we would just be like, no, even though it's literally my face and they know my face. But yeah. And I remember we had like a crazy one about like something like weirdly sexual. Like, I can't remember what it was, but legals like basically sent me an email saying, you know, like double hand job something in the animation is approved. Like we had a huge debate over it. And that was always really funny. But with your stuff, like it was just so clean, and it's really, really neat to be part of this.
Yay! So excited. It's already been fun collaborating on this. Maybe I'll have you back on again after we launch the show or something. We can talk about some of the process or some, do another catch up sometime.
Yeah, sounds good, man.
So check out grantdraws.com and Art School Acid on Instagram. If you want to, if you're liking the suit that I'm wearing, you can go to Freeborn Designs, put in offer code capital trip, all caps, and get 15% off. And thanks for supporting on Patreon at Mind Under Pod. That's how we pay for editing and all sorts of the goings on behind the show. So thank you all for listening. And until next time, keep on salivating, honeys. Yeah.